come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday night, the Freak Show happens, whether you're ready for it or not. This is a movie review podcast. We watch a movie chosen round robin by somebody in the group, and then we sit around, watch it, talk about it for your listening pleasure. Who are these people who will talk about it, you ask? The internet radio superstars.
Sean.
Holly.
Michaela.
And I'm Colin.
I suppose if they were viewing this podcast on YouTube, they'd be la-watching.
La-watching?
Yeah, la-watching. I think so, because it's on YouTube, so you got the video, quote-unquote, and they would
listen.
Are there photos?
Are there photos to look at?
This is probably a photo.
There's just a photo.
A photo.
A graphic.
La-watch the photo.
La-watch the photo. Yes. All right.
You can find us on YouTube.
Yes, you can.
iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio,
Pop
and
a,
more.
That one fucking one you keep saying. What's the one?
Google Play?
No, it's got a weird name.
Podbay.
No, not the one.
Castroller.
Yeah.
There you go.
Castroller.
If you have found us on one of those fantastic services.
Let us know if you found us on Castroller.
Yeah. And give us a star or a like, because it helps like
just
move us up the ranks into, you know.
Subscribe even.
The annals of podcast
history. Subscribe? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So who chose this week's movie?
Michaela.
And what did we watch?
We watched Quentin Dupieux's 2010 Rubber.
Dupieux.
He is a Frenchman.
Dupieux.
Is it a French movie?
It's Dupieux.
Technically,
It is a French surrealist
Technically,
movie.
Technically, it is a French
is.
Movie,
That's
yes.
what this movie is. This is the genre.
Yes. And this movie, believe it or not, is about a tire with psychokinetic powers that kills people. Believe it. It's real. It is not a 70s movie either. It sounds like it could be a 70s C-level grindhouse movie, but this is a 2010 movie. $500,000 budget in this movie, believe it or not.
$500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So how they did the tire effects?
That was the thing. I was sitting there watching the whole
time. I know a little bit about that.
Question.
Because you wonder if there's something like motors around the rim of the tire, or they're just digitally erasing some guy like spinning the tire.
Yeah, a whole guy.
Well, I have an answer for you.
Oh.
So it's very similar to like Jim Henson type like remote controls. Is what they had. They had some mechanics on the inside of the tire, like you were saying, and then they had a guy with a remote kind of like turning the tire and rolling it and stopping on a dime. And they had to like keep redeveloping them because they kept showing up in the shot because you have such a low profile with the tire of what you can have in there without it showing. So it's basically like, there's like mechanics along the inside of the tire that make it move and rotate. And there's a guy with like basically like a drone pilot, you know, kind of like with a remote making it move. And then like I think for like the longer shots where he's just rolling down a street and not stopping, they literally just have a guy push the tire down the road for that one.
And I'm assuming in like the close-up shots where you can't see the whole tire, there's someone handling it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like the way that you called him a he.
He. Yeah, his name's Robert. Okay.
Well.
He has a name.
I mean,
they don't say it, but he has a name.
He or she. It could be a she.
Let's look at the video box art.
Oh.
It says here, Rubber is the story of Robert, an inanimate tire. Robert, he has a name.
Right. He does.
Did Robert have a stand-in, a stunt double?
I hope so.
They said there were like three or four of them. And
yeah.
You'd have to. So it's literally a movie about a tire. Now you wonder, you might be wondering, folks, like how can you get an entire feature out of this premise? How long is it?
83 minutes.
An 83-minute feature about a tire rolling around and killing people.
You make most of the movie make no sense.
All right. So
on purpose.
So what's going on with this? All right. So maybe you should set this up. Like what's the, I guess we already did set it up, but the beginning of the movie before we actually see the tire is one of the, like, it's, this is on the level of like David Lynch or something, right? This is kind of that surrealism that Sean was talking about where you're going to have, a character driving a car down a road that's full of chairs where he's aiming for a bunch of chairs like an obstacle course. You think maybe originally that he's going to go in between them, but he's knocking them all over.
That's how you get my attention.
Yeah.
This is when I heard you guys sitting there like, oh, what? What's going on? And there's little chuckles like, oh, this is odd. He's aiming for all these chairs. Car stops and a guy gets out of the trunk.
Grabs a glass of water.
Looks directly into the camera.
and gives a speech, mm-hmm. which I think is the underpinning of like the entire movie. Mm.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So the director didn't want to write a backstory as to why Robert has his powers and why he comes to life. He just wanted to make a weird movie about a tire killing people. So they wrote the movie about the tire killing people and then reverse engineered that opening scene of being like, hey, there's no reason for this, so don't think too much about it. Just enjoy the movie for what it is. And it ended up being way more meta than they intended it to be. Sure. But, you know, he wanted to get that out of the way at the beginning so that people wouldn't be like, well, this doesn't make any sense. And just right. be like, don't fucking think about it. Just enjoy the movie for what it is.
Well, it begs the question of why do you want to make a movie about a killer tire? I mean,
why not?
You're kind of... I mean, what you have? If this wasn't a movie about a killer tire, it'd be about a killer, an amnesiac killer with psychokinetic abilities that awakens in the desert, wanders to town, discovers that he can kill people, likes it, mm-hmm. starts murdering people, mm-hmm. and the.
We've already seen a movie about people blowing up other people's heads, psychokinetically. That's Scanners. We've seen that already. Yeah.
If you want to do that movie, but you want to. Do it differently.
Yeah.
I mean, a tire? Like, who had that, like, idea at one point? Just like, let's insert the tire. The tire can be it.
Why not a killer donut? I suppose because a tire can, like, get around.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's made to go.
I know, like, the first, like, third of the movie when we see him, like, learning how to, like, move for the first time and, like, learning that he can, like, crush things and stuff. That whole thing was inspired by the first act of WALL-E, where, like, WALL-E's by himself and kind of like, you know, figuring out his surroundings. So I think if you look at it through that lens of like you're watching this inanimate object go through a journey of self-actualization, mm-hmm. it makes a lot more sense as a movie.
Well, I mean, it worked pretty well. I mm-hmm. thought, you know, that you see the thing wake up. Well, I mean, we're saying a tire wakes up, right? I mean, it tries exactly to gain its sea legs are standing mm-hmm. and then rolling and then... you know, I think that it's like, you know, I can't remember what the music was like there. I think the music like really kicked in once he had figured out his psychokinetic mm-hmm. abilities. We're saying psychokinetic because there's a point made in the movie that is what this, mm-hmm.
right.
It's not telekinetic, it's psychokinetic abilities. Mm-hmm. But it does like
anthropomorph.
I think the strongest thing about this movie is how they make something as simple as a tire emote really well. Mm-hmm. Like for me, it always stands out a lot at the scene where he's drinking water out of a puddle. That's the scene where like I think the emoting from like such a simple object is the best.
Yeah.
And you know, the director also said that like his original intention was to make Robert just like a completely like evil, straight line, one dimensional character. But like after filming a little bit of it, he said it's just like an idiot dog running around, you know, and he's like, it's kind of like they were laughing at the dailies, basically, mm-hmm. you know, being like, this is not menacing. It's like an idiot dog just running around the desert, right. you know, that happens to kill people.
It doesn't know any better, so he just kills people.
Exactly. So
is this a hipster movie?
It might be. I mean,
it's like it's a bunch of.
They're French, like, so you got to take that into account, you know?
Yeah.
You got to put the French spin on it.
They're themselves every day, like, can you believe that people gave us the money to make this? I'm doing the Italian again.
Italian.
Giggity.
This movie might have been made on a dare.
You got a problem with hipsters, Colin?
But this is amazing that, like, you can get, like, what did you say, half a million?
Half a million. Half a million.
Half a million dollars to make a movie. That we are assuming right now was made on a dare.
It was shown at Sundance as well.
Well, because it's artistic. Sundance think
of this movie? Was it funded by Firestone?
No.
You know what? Our image, the tire going around killing people.
Did they have to scratch off the brand on the tire?
Yeah, so that is like, a good point. This is a perfect.
I'm not saying that we're making killer tires.
Yeah.
This is a perfect opportunity for some product placement in this movie, and there's none. There is no product placement in this movie anywhere.
No, nobody wants their name on a killer tire. Yeah.
Come on, no one's stupid enough to believe that this is, you know, a representation of a brand.
There's some guy out there who's like whose dream was like, I'm going to start a tire company one day, and he's been working so hard for 10 years and he's barely making it, and he sees this and this is his opportunity. He's going to get his tire brand in there. he'd go for it.
Probably him. Yeah. But get then, his name but on the that tire companies are worried that some, you know, copycat whack job is going to go out there and start killing people with tire. You know, he's been like, I don't know how to kill this person. I saw this movie and they did it with a tire.
A copycat tire killer, Colin. God, come on.
Brilliant.
And fire.
It's a deep cut. So yeah.
This will be like version 2, like Human Centipede 2, where they're influenced by the movie.
Yeah.
So they do mm-hmm. it. So
oh
now,
my God.
Well, number
God.
2 is. Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Well, they do go to Hollywood, and that's spoiler. They roll on to Hollywood at the end of this movie. They're so it could get way more meta in a sequel to this movie.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I take this movie is a critique of making films in general from someone who has never made film before. Because the guy who directed this
has
movie
he never made?
No, the guy who directed this movie is a like DJ house music guy. No joke. He scored the movie as well.
All right.
So, yeah. So he has no filmmaking experience, but I take this as like a pretty bold critique of saying like you think about, you know, the audience is being, you know, no matter what their criticism is, they're being told they're wrong. That think about how Hollywood makes movies. Even when people like Batman versus Superman kind of situation, even people are like, we'll go see it and spend our money on it, but we think it's terrible and we're telling you why. And the studios say, fuck you, you don't know what you're talking about, and keep rolling. You know, this movie's kind of a critique of like Hollywood thinks they know what's best for you.
I will show them.
Even when you're telling them this doesn't make any sense. Like there's literally a part where a character says, this scene doesn't make any sense. Why are you doing this? And they tell him, don't worry about it. You know, we got to figure it out that, you know. This is a Frenchman's critique of Hollywood movies, I guess.
But the weird thing is that, I mean, I suppose like the analogy there or the metaphor I suppose we're talking about, right? Yeah. It's like that, like something like Cabin in the Woods, I can see it more clearly because you have the guys behind the scenes who are engineering the thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, we meet an audience who like, you know, we find out that the guy at the beginning who's talking to the camera turns around, it turns out there are people gathered here in the desert with mm-hmm. binoculars mm-hmm. going to be watching. They keep talking about it like it's a movie, but they're actually just on a hill watching the events happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the characters in this who are telling the audience, it's like, don't worry, you know, things are happening for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you were mm-hmm. saying that this scene doesn't make any sense. And the characters are explaining like, just, you know,
yeah.
bug off, man.
Right.
It's like,
yeah, because
this
no
is
matter
what's happening. Is it a critique of filmmaking or is it a critique of movie audience?
I think it's a critique of the Hollywood machine is what I think it is.
The audience is being part of that.
Yeah. Especially because the point with the character they call the accountant or whatever that brings them the turkey and, you know, kind of like settles the crowd and everything. To me, he's like kind of a combination of like the role of the producer where he like finds the money and finds the way to like finance it. But he's also like the MPAA. Like they're a test audience, right? Like they're test screening this movie and they're giving their feedback and he's saying, you know, fuck you. We're going to do what we want anyways, you know. So that's how I took this movie anyways, you know.
Because it's almost like, maybe I had a little different interpretation. It was just, it seemed that the movie was trying to say from within the movie, like, you know, it wasn't like the creators. It was like the characters mm-hmm. within the movie were talking to you and basically saying, like, it doesn't matter what we do. You're going to watch it because it's on the screen, because it's happening.
Right.
You're going to watch it.
Right.
You're curious enough to be here. There's like, because the characters... you know, the audience characters are making it like it's boring so far. Mm-hmm. Oh, don't worry, just stick with it. It's probably going to pick up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're just saying no matter what we put in front of you, you're going to watch it because mm-hmm. you're idiots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's less, you know, I mean, so maybe I was taking it like it's not criticizing movies. They mm-hmm. are in love with making the movie.
Right.
They're just saying, like, the movie's going to happen whether you are watching it or mm-hmm. not. It's
right.
like it lives by itself. Mm-hmm. You're an idiot for watching this because mm-hmm. it's about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
There's nothing happening for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The problem I'm running into is the movie, aside from interpreting what the filmmakers meant while making it, the way this movie is presented, it almost makes it critique-proof. Because it tells you right off the bat, you're going to see things that don't make sense.
Right, exactly.
So
is it a safeguard? Yeah.
Because they just say, don't worry, it's not going to make sense in certain parts. Well, then, but I have, because the brain wants to reconcile this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I have questions that I know that not going to get answered. Like, why is the tire alive? Like, mm-hmm. this it's a thing that the tire wakes up and is alive. See, in this and world.
And with me, I accept the tire without a backstory.
Sure, that's fine.
I want to know why nobody knows what the fuck is going on. The only two people that know this is staged is the cop and the accountant, and neither one of them actually seem to know what's happening.
Right. Yeah. They think they do, but yeah.
But they don't. But they don't. Like, why does nobody know what's happening?
Right.
Well, how is this possible?
But that's where I wonder if there's like a disconnect. Like, there's two movies taking place here. There's the actual events of the film, which is the slasher movie involving a killer tire on the loose. And then there's this like meta contextual, you know, critique or criticism, satire going on of movies and their audience.
That's
and like,
true.
That's a separate thing. So, in that storyline, nobody knows what's going on.
Right.
And so that's where I'm like, I don't know if there is the representative of the filmmakers, unless that's just supposed to be the voice of the characters. You know what I mean? Maybe I'm searching for something that.
No, I just think that's
there, but
I think that's a symptom of a guy who's never made a movie before. I think that's what it is. I think those two movies, those two conflicting plot lines happening at the same time is just someone inexperienced making a movie, is what it is. I think that's why that happened. Because this guy knows nothing about making movies.
You can't make a movie and expect your audience to not ask why. You can't.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I get that that's the point in the beginning with the speech and everything, but at some point, the continuity has to add up.
Right.
You know, it has to.
I mean, a good contrast for this is, I mean, think about Demolition Man last week. They explained everything.
Yeah.
Exposition is the whole script of that movie. This is what happened since you last woke up, you know? Whereas this movie could not be more different than that.
Right.
There's long stretches of this movie with no dialogue at all.
Do you find movies more intriguing the less information, the less they explain themselves, or are you more satisfied by a movie? Like, when you come away from it, you're like, well, I know, you know, I can put the whole thing together in my head. Because it was explained to me, I saw it happen, everything made sense. And then there's these other movies where, like, pieces of them are missing. So you come away and you're like, you know, you got to think about it a little while and digest this. Like, how does this piece connect to each other? It's like...
Well, I mean, in trying to figure out how pieces connect to each other in, I'm going to say, a normal film, like, I think filmmaker intent... is what kind of lives in that area between those two pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly.
They'll give you this, they'll give you this.
Right.
And if you're in with what the filmmaker is intending to do, that's where you're able to put things together and make sense.
Right.
Things that they don't want to explain to you, but they give you in order to put together.
Exactly. I think Christopher Nolan is a perfect balance of those two things. He gives you enough information that you can follow the story, but there's still like gaps of information that
Inception
leave you.
Is a great example.
Inception.
That.
The Prestige is a good example of that as well. Yeah, you know, and I think that is so delicately handled in his movies because he's an experienced filmmaker. Like he can handle that kind of storytelling because he has made a shit ton of movies. Mm-hmm. Whereas this guy is a fucking musician that's like, I'm going to make a really weird movie.
He hasn't figured out
that
you can only leave so much to the imagination of the audience.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've often wondered too, like, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, probably the best surrealist that I know is David Lynch, you know, and his stuff. And there's a lot of times I'm watching David Lynch movies wondering if, you know, like some of the stuff that happens is, you know, is this like a private joke or is he having one over on us, the viewing audience, right? It's like some of the stuff is absurd where it's like, that's also what this feels like. This is like an inside joke to the people who made it, right? So it's like that kind of level of ironic detachment. It's not really a movie. It's more just the whole thing is a lark, you know? I mean, this is a big goof. And who can we get to go see it?
Mm-hmm.
There's more to it than
this.
You know, because, I mean, we're talking about it's a well-crafted film. It's,
right.
You know,
it's a beautifully shot movie.
It is. It really is.
It has some great shit. Like I said, for an inanimate object, the way it, like, it shoots, it's stalking people and animals is beautifully done. It's very, like, Halloween-esque in a lot of the ways he'll come into the background of a shot and the character at the foreground doesn't notice he's there and things like that. Things like that are really well done. I know it probably sounds like we're just, like, shitting all over this movie, but, like, there it has really good technical aspects of it.
Yeah.
It's the storytelling is where it kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
Like,
there's even, you know, like, oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, sound-wise, production-wise, all of that is
the sound
great.
Really wonderful.
Right, and it was beautifully shot. It doesn't look like $500,000. It looks like it might even be a little bit more. Like, there's some great CGI special effects in this movie as well. All the killings were originally done as practical effects, like Tom Savini-type watermelon blowing up.
Sure.
Yeah. But they but the director didn't like the way they looked on screen with the rest of the movies, so they went with CGI, which is
I think it works.
It looks pretty seamless. So, yeah. But I think for especially given the budget, it looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as you were saying, like the things that I thought some of the stuff that worked really well was that like first introductory segment where you're being introduced to the tire for the first time, it rolls over a like a
plastic bottle.
Mm-hmm. And it's got this like tentative, you know, just kind of squishing, like how much does it resist, and then flatten the thing. Mm-hmm. And right then, you know, everybody in the room was like, "Boop, he's got a taste for it." Now it's like, so it's the movie's communicating in that way. Yeah. We understand what just happened. It's like this thing met something that it had never seen before, realized it was stronger and more powerful and could flatten it, and got enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing that it goes after is the rabbit or the
bottle?
The scorpion, and the glass bottle.
Yeah, so it mows over a scorpion, crushes that thing. And then
it is learning. It starts off learning that it is God, basically, in its world.
Yeah.
Like, because it just woke up and, like, this is nothing to him. So that tire thinks it's God at that point.
I really never thought I'd watch a movie that had serious character development in a tire.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think this movie is at its best when it's just focusing on Robert the Tire. Like, all the audience stuff and, like, the sheriff stuff, like, that is all so tertiary for me to, like, if this movie cut out a lot of that and just was more about the tire, like a slasher film with just Robert the Tire, I think it would be a stronger movie all around.
See, I agree, but at the same time, I really did enjoy the dialogue with, like, the sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're the only people who talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I know, but, like, it was funny. Like, I thought it was funny dialogue. I thought it worked.
What'd you guys think about our, like, final girl, I guess you could call her? Roxanne Mascuieta, I think is what her name
the
is,
French
right?
girl?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was on Gossip Girl. Yeah.
I mean, you know, to contrast her and her leading man is a rubber tire.
Right.
You know? As far as, like, an actor, you're saying, like, the performance?
Yeah, what'd you think about her?
I didn't think she really acted all that
She didn't
much.
Have much to do.
No. Yeah.
So I can't really judge her acting. So I have seen her in other things, so I know that she can act.
Mm-hmm. Right. And by the time, but she does pull off a nice little thing later. By the time, you know, like the technical jig is up later on, and they're meeting in the van and everything, she does a great job acting that she's a terrible actor.
Yeah,
she's giving the line to the mannequin at the end.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is like the biggest amount of dialogue that she has.
Right.
I mean, she pulls it off in that stilted way, which is just the pentameter of how she's saying it is wrong, and it's funny to watch to see her do it wrong. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she has like, I mean, I think it feels like that this Quentin Depew.
Depew.
You almost just have to like forget there are letters in that word.
Depew. Right.
Depew. Yeah, exactly.
It feels like he's a guy who is experiencing things visually, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so he's got the idea of like, well, you got a tire and you're going to have this good looking girl. And somebody, I think, did a fan art, or maybe it was
the
actual posters, which is, you know, her like kind of was she
that's real
leaning
art
leaning up against a giant tire or something. And I'm like, that's the image that sells this movie right there, the girl and the killer tire,
yeah,
you know. But beyond that, it's like, what, you know, is she asked to do as an actress, you know? I mean, and it's like, is there, it sets up like I suppose most serial killer movies do, that you have a like the killer has a fascination with her because he passes her on the road and he's trying to stop her car and passes her and then, you know, follows her to the motel and kind of sneaks in and watches her having a shower. Mm-hmm. And then after that, he like drowns himself, right? And he goes and
goes to watch her swim.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He watches her swim. That's what it was. And then like, you know, goes to the bottom of the pool. And then after that, it's like, I'm like, did I miss a scene where the cops recruited her because they knew that the tire had an interest in her?
Nope, they just didn't show that.
No.
They tried to entice the tire out of a hotel room at some point by basically dressing up a mannequin to look like her with a voice box and a piece
It looks
of
like her. They did a pretty good job of making a mannequin look like her. Doing? Yeah.
Like, oh. I was like, why does her hair look so weird?
Yeah.
Oh, it's
gone. Like, even the shoes were the same shoes she was wearing. Like, they did a really good job. Yeah. Speaking of video box art. So we've got the DVD in front of us, and it's got like a lenticular cover. It's fine, right? But
for those who don't know what lenticular means,
There you go.
3D.
Hologram.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what lenticular means to me.
Pretty much every country had different poster art for this movie. And a lot, every single one, except for the official DVD art in America, was wildly more interesting for this movie.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I've got four of them here. So this one was the original French one, and they all look very like grindhousey.
Yeah.
And they look they're infinitely more interesting than the American one.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with distributors and deciding their cover art for stuff, because they make them look terrible. Like at this point,
exactly.
Anything that comes out like this always makes it it look cheap. And it just doesn't make it look as interesting. Like these covers you're showing us right now,
they're like sell painted.
It. Yeah,
right. You know, they sell it more to me. Yeah,
that's the one, right?
Than what this
is my favorite one. I love this one.
Was it, that was the American.
Yep, those. Yeah, that's but it never made it to the DVD cover though. Why is this not the DVD cover?
This cover. It's the most generic, basic.
Right. Also, this movie has some of the best fucking taglines I've ever read for a movie. Right. So the DVD we've got in front of us says, "Careful where you tread." This one I have in front of me says, "Are you tired of the expected?" And then this one has a poll quote, which I don't know who this is from, but it says, "The best killer tire movie you'll ever see."
That's fair.
Right, yeah. It's a shame we didn't get all this artwork.
Yeah.
You know, on DVD or even like a Blu-ray, make a deluxe Blu-ray with this fancy artwork, you know.
Is this crazy those official
boring.
Artwork?
All official.
I wonder why they can't pull some of that to be widely distributed. I got to imagine it's too for they can get it for the artist to make this work for a certain amount of money to be displayed, but they to have it be the cover of a DVD for the rest of its life.
Right.
I can't imagine that they can afford for some reason, or it seems to me there's got to be a reason why they go with this.
That's your marketing department. This is the image that best sells it to your target audience.
But
that's,
at the same time, yes and no, because it's a tire. So much you can do with it. You know, it's so simple. You can do it. Like when I saw this movie in theaters. When I went and saw it in theaters, this was the poster. This was the poster I saw. This was the poster at the theater when I went, and I was like, "Fuck yeah!" So like, it could go with this grindhouse poster. Really, you know, it was great.
Modern art.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's really unfortunate that marketing killed this. You know.
Yeah.
Because when I worked at Barnes & Noble and the movie and you know music department, this was on my recommend shelf for years, and I would constantly see people pick it up and be like oh it looks interesting, and then put it back down. I was like, if this had the fucking grindhouse art, people would be buying this shit up like crazy.
So you're saying maybe by having a literal tire on the front of the video box that it's too off put like you're like, it's a movie about a killer tire,
right?
I'm not gonna watch
it's
this
too,
whereas
to the point
theatrical art is like a little more abstract.
Yeah, a little more interesting.
Yeah,
there might be
tire that big that she's leaning against. Is that what's going on in this movie? There's questions with this. There's no questions. I can see exactly what it is.
And this lenticular art implies that he kills this like fucking bird on the road, right? Mm. So like you're like it that gives away too much, I think, on the front already.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so.
It's just
we'll have to post that that poster that we're talking about.
The different art. Yeah.
It's the minimalist one that we're talking about, the black and white
it's
and
fantastic.
Red with the tire with the eyeball. Mm-hmm.
You gotta subscribe to us on Facebook.
You do.
Yep. There you go. Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show.
There you go. And we'll post a selection of all these posters this week. So, all right. So going back to, basically, I think we've covered in some manner,
pretty much,
like the actual plot of the movie. So now jumping back over to the B story, the audience. Okay. So there's like a plot happening here. Mm-hmm. Is there a plot? I don't know.
There's threads of a plot.
Okay.
There's the start of a plot.
Strings.
That never finishes.
This is where our biggest movie star is in the
Charlie Kuntz. Kidding.
Wings Hauser, the star.
I was gonna say Ethan Coen from Gilmore Girls. Is what I was gonna say. Yeah, Glenn from Gilmore Girls.
We all have the ones we know people from.
Yeah. They're all like part of this gaggle sitting up on the mountaintop. So, as they're trying to explain this stuff to us, I suppose there's also like the characters of the guy who owns the motel. There's the cleaning lady, victim in the hotel.
Yeah.
But at some point, these people show up to see a quote unquote movie. The movie is going to last in their time for hours and
days,
I suppose, right? Because they sleep out there in the desert, and they're always complaining that they don't have any food. And so at some point, the accountant character, he sleeps back in his motel room, gets a phone call from the master.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, says, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No, yes, that threw me too. What the fuck?
I think that's just like the producer who's like producing the film. The film, you know.
That's like the devil or something,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, right, yeah. Well, you saw that kit he opened up and had all the instruments in it, you know, in the hotel room before he killed that turkey and poisoned it. Like, well, he had like a fucking briefcase full of weapons, you know?
That was the way that the shot sequence was laid out. It's him talking on the phone and then the wide shot revealing while he's on the phone there's a turkey in the room. And I'm like, all right, this is like one of those white buffalo or white horse things,
mm-hmm.
you know, Twin Peaks.
Ooh, like or Halloween 2.
Or Halloween. Yeah. You're just being weird for the sake of being weird, aren't you?
Yeah.
But it turns out that's the turkey that he's supposed to kill and then deliver or cook this thing and deliver it to the audience.
What did he cook it in?
That's what I was
deep
wondering.
Fire that he had in the for no reason. That
for no reason.
Things happened that way.
Yeah.
Okay. No reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's see, this is, why that, is, the that alien is like the ultimate no cop reason. Out, right?
It really
it is. Yeah. It is.
Every, the things he's saying is like, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
Yeah. Okay, his speech in the beginning about his examples for no reason are not great examples. Like, I've always had an issue with that. Like,
they aren't. When he talks, I don't know if they're doing that on purpose.
Yeah. That's the thing. That's always irked me because, like, when he talks about how, like, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one is the one that bothers me the most because he talks about how, like, we never see them go to the bathroom and it's for no reason. No, there is a reason. The reason is we don't need see it. That's right, the reason right. for
and
it.
And there's
you know,
other examples you mentioned that there is a reason.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Why is E.T. Brown?
Why does the pianist hide? Well, it's fucking war-torn Poland
exactly.
at this point. He's hiding for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he doesn't die.
Like, I feel like all of us, with our knowledge, could write better examples, than movie had.
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know if the filmmaker is being funny at this point, trying to be funny, and giving us examples of things where he says there's no reason, but there is obviously a reason, or he's just doing bad no reasons.
He didn't correctly identify the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, he said excellent Chainsaw Massacre. It's just, yeah, that bothered me. I'm just like, it's not.
That wasn't a rights thing, because they said E.T., and they said, you know, everything. Else, so
yeah,
that's weird.
So I don't know if he's being serious in those or if he's fucking with us.
Yeah,
that bothered me. That's always bothered me too. I agree.
Or
with
is he just doesn't have that knowledge? You know what I mean?
Like,
the actor screwing up. Who knows? They're most definitely fucking with us.
Yeah,
I mean, like that's the whole point of. I suppose that's why you're supposed to get enjoyment out of the movie, right? It's going to be this kind of unspoken or spoken thing on their part that we're going to fuck with you, the audience, for the entire duration.
I mean, we are going to be watching a killer tire movie.
Right.
They are fucking with us.
But it's funny because, seriously, like I said earlier, watching it, everything about the tire, I fully accept without question. It's all the other subplot that I have questions.
Right. I agree.
Like that the random killing tire is the most believable part of this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's basically like you take Michael Myers and make him a tire. That's like all his scenes in this movie are really similar to that.
Why not? Am I right? Why not?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Why not? Hey, you know what? I've watched a movie called Surf Nazis Must Die.
Oh, I've seen that.
After I watched that, anything's possible. That's, you know, so I don't question a tire killing people. You know, there's so many B and C movies out there with ridiculous premises that
I'm in for your high concept thing.
Yeah,
it's just just doing this. All right, go for it. Yeah, I'm fine.
The only thing that makes this, you know, stand out is that it's at a time period where people aren't interested in movies like that. If this came out in the 70s or the 80s, this would have fit right in with all those, you know, trauma type movies.
This would have been like a midnight movie like the El Topos or the Eraserheads or something
exactly.
like that. I mean,
yeah.
that's why it's kind of cool that people are still given $500,000 to go off and pursue something that's completely off the wall and out there like this. You know,
I'm just surprised it wasn't Michelin. That's all.
Right.
Well, we were talking during the movie. This is a Magnet film release.
Yes.
And for a while there, Magnet was trying to like build some capital by releasing specifically horror movies and, you know, like fantastic films. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what they're doing now, to tell you the truth. I know they're still releasing stuff, but
it's very high caliber
dramas or something like that.
And it seems like it's very few and far between, like they're placing their specific bets on the movies they're releasing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, cause I don't hear about them as much anymore. Like we said, during watching the movie, A24 is the one who's busting everything.
Right.
Out.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, movie companies, like these little distributors kind of go in these cycles where they all get their start in horror films.
Sure.
Because they must go to the American film market or con or something like that. And they buy these, they see these things and they buy them up and then they start putting them out. And then they get, you know, enough of a cachet to them that filmmakers actually start saying, you know, it would be really cool if I can get the Magnet logo on the front of my movie. So you go to Magnet to see if you can distribute Troll Hunter or whatever you know, you have coming out. And then at some point, the bubble bursts.
Right. When is A24 going to give us something bad? Ooh. That's just going to be like, ooh, well,
it's not bad. It's just that they eventually become successful and want to move into, you know, distributing higher end products. Sure. And then they leave the horror audience behind.
Well, they won a Best Picture Oscar this year, so they probably peaked. Yeah. So, probably
the moment that announces the downfall. Yeah. Then we're going to be off to something. You know, somebody else will be around next year.
Yeah.
But keep your eye on Sundance.
Yeah. So, not to go back to the video box art too much, but I forgot to show you guys. Did you guys see what the DVD looks like? It's pretty great. It looks exactly like a tire.
Something else I would be severely
Exactly. It's pretty great.
At a certain point, there's certain things you have to do.
Exactly. Like, I mean, at least marketing didn't fuck that up, right?
Yeah.
You know? Like, exactly.
And with the spoke hole in it there, it kind of makes it look like an eye.
Oh, yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah.
See, okay, they did well on that. Yeah,
they did that. Bravo. So this movie, okay, I might be reading too much into it, but I'm pretty sure this movie.
I think we've done that at this point.
Yeah.
Well, you have to,
right? I mean, that's what we want to do.
I'm like 90% certain. I've seen this movie a couple times now that this movie contains a reference to, like, a horror movie I will probably make you all watch at some point that is very near and dear to my heart, Funny Games. I'm pretty sure there's a reference to Funny Games in this movie. There's a part where Rubber, after he goes on his like 3-day killing spree, when he snaps after seeing the genocide of his people in the big tire fire, which was a great scene.
Yes.
Bravo. We see him in a hotel room, and he's watching NASCAR on a TV, and there's a body with its head blown off. Next to him, there's a scene in Funny Games.
Oh, you're going to ruin it.
No, it's not a spoiler. Where a character is watching NASCAR and there is a body with its head blown off. And that is a French film. And I, like, so,
is
you
that,
know,
I was
it's a French
film. Is that
French
the one
film.
You're talking about, not the American remake?
They're exactly the same. They're shot for shot the same. Yeah. So, but they're watching NASCAR on a very similar TV. It's shot the same way. So I like to believe it's a reference to a movie I really love. Too coincidental to not be a reference at this point. But it's a really deep cut because that's one scene in a very strange movie. Right. So, you know.
Plus, I mean, it's NASCAR. Like, that kind of drives it home that they are referencing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I love that scene just for the fact that it's making this nod to this other movie that not a lot of people have seen that I love so much. So, yeah.
Are there references to other movies throughout it?
I got the Omen
at the end.
Because of the tricycle?
Yeah.
At some point. That was amusing. I mean, again, it was subverting the expectations. You have, like, the one surviving audience spectator, right? He's out there, and he's like, you got to have more action or something here. And the sheriff just like, fuck it, I'm going to go in there and blast the goddamn tire apart with a shotgun, which he does and brings the thing out and drops it in front of him. And then the thing, you know, comes back out as a reincarnated.
Hey, wait, he's reincarnated as a tricycle.
Yeah.
That's the best line of the movie.
That was funny.
Which is just like, what the hell? Yeah, that's right. They also, there was a moment there where they, well, did we talk about, did they poison the master, has the accountant poison the audience?
Yeah.
So they kill the audience.
Yeah.
The idea is if you kill the audience, then all the players, who aren't players, they're just the characters, can stop putting on this farce and go home or something, right? But because he survived, it's like, shit. Forget everything I just said.
Yeah.
That, like, if it was a more, I don't know, like, it almost seems.
Fourth wall kind of.
Well, it almost feels like if the message should be the contempt that filmmakers, not or even like the people in charge of distributing films who hear all the comments about their movies, have the contempt for their audience that they would just want to kill them and go home at some point. You know what I mean?
Right. The movie will exist even without you being.
Right. Just shut up. I'm tired of you guys complaining about everything.
Yeah.
This problem.
It's the
stuff.
DC movie effect.
Just kill you and go home. I don't want to hear this anymore. But yeah, I don't. Exactly. But it doesn't. I don't know where he. I don't know where he's. The filmmaker is getting that motivation. Considering, I mean, this is his first movie. Unless he just knows of.
He's people. He's someone like us who's like sees all the problems happening in Hollywood and is like, I'm gonna fucking point it all out to you in my movie.
What if I told you this wasn't his first movie?
It's not.
It's not.
It isn't, apparently.
This is Colin's thing. He's just got his one little trick. Yep.
What?
This is Colin's corner. Well, he's got his one little, ha-ha.
Does it say from first-time filmmaker? He has a story of some film that he made prior to this. He, like, made several, I think.
Was it a short film? Or
maybe.
Okay, well, that's a little different.
But he said that he went to see his films in a theater with people and, like, you know, there'd be 15 people in the theater, and 12 of them would get up and leave before the show was over.
Okay, he has contempt for
one
his
time. Yes. He went into a theater where his movie was playing, and he was the only one there.
He has contempt
and
for
the
his
movie. Yep. Was playing without an audience.
This makes more sense.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna. Which is now he's got a fucking chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Right.
This changes, Colin. Where were you at the beginning of this?
Yeah. Well, because you gotta, you know, get out what you think the movie is.
It's like he's making his own movie in this podcast.
Yeah.
The twist ending, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
God damn it.
Oh, how mad would you guys have been at that pop down at the end if it was like produced by M. Night Shyamalan or something? Would you guys have been like, what the fuck? Jason Blumhouse was in on this or something.
Yeah, well, it just kind of, I think there was, so that colored my, this is the second time I've seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I read it differently because you're intrigued, you don't know what's going on.
Yep.
This second time, like, you know, knowing what was coming, and I was more struck by the story of the audience this time around, and I had read that anecdote, and I'm like, this movie has contempt for me sitting here watching it.
Yeah.
That's what this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, fuck you. I'm going to put whatever I want on the screen and be as ridiculous as possible. I'm going to tell you up front that there's no reason or explanation for anything that I'm going to do, and you're going to watch
it. You'll see it because it's a killer tire movie.
Yep.
What a fucking
God damn it.
Wow.
Son of a bitch.
I think it's admirable to make the movie you want to make and say fuck everybody else. I think that's
very true.
You know,
I mean, it's definitely a one of a kind, you know, like, experience. Is it? I mean, I guess you have to say that it's an artistic experience, only in that the, you know, I mean, you know, we're reading into it, and this is what you're supposed to do with films, I think, is the, you know, you're bringing something to it, you know, and trying to interpret the symbols, and the, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know, if you're making a film with a budget for a company with, like, you have to be making it for other people.
I don't think he did, though.
It's an acquisition.
I think this was all, bought up post and post by Magnet. I think he made this on his own and then like you know, it was optioned out after that.
But you're still talking about a, you know, I mean, obviously there's financiers involved. Like, that's, you know, at this level, right? Like, somehow he convinced, based on the previous experience of films that he's made, say, you know, I'm going to make this thing and I explain it to the financiers. This is what I'm going to do. And they agree to give him the film, the money to make it. So, you know, in that regard, it's like you're not really making it for another audience, except the investor assumes that they're going to make some money off of it just based on the premise and probably that poster art alone.
Which was all great. It was all fantastic poster art. Seriously, I cannot express how disappointed I am in this fucking DVD art.
I just feel like if you're going to make a film with the intent of other people to see it, you can't have such a big fuck you.
I think you can. I guess that's the question we ask. What are the reasons why you can't?
Because it's a dick move.
But you're saying that that'll make the movie anti-commercial? Like, if you're saying that if it's making a comment on the audience and the audience won't show up to see it, in which case they won't be financially successful.
But that's not the message that's bringing the audience in.
Right, because the audience doesn't see that. On the surface, this is a movie about, this is, well, I mean, is it subtext or it's
over? It's pretty much text. It's just text, no subtext. Yeah.
It's drawing you in as the high concept of killer tire movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go see it because of that, and then it's got, like, this, you know, thing that it's presenting to you after the fact. But, yeah, it is kind of like you've been invited to a party where they're going to insult you.
A roast?
It's dinner for schmucks. That's what this movie is, dinner for schmucks.
Yeah. But you can enjoy that because you don't take it personally because you're, you know, kind of, a hipster type where it's ironic. And
I appreciate original storytelling. So even if it's making fun of me, at least you wrote an original story. I'm just saying in what was it like 70% of movies that came out last year were either adapted from source material or remakes or reboots or something like that, you know. So I appreciate original content. Definitely. Even if it's not great. Yeah. At least you gave it a shot. That's basically how I sum up my opinion about Jupiter Ascending. Wasn't great, but at least you wrote something original, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. I mean, eventually, it's like, well, you say, you know, at some point there were movies that we had on here that I would leave with the tag, like, this is a movie for adventurous filmmakers or for adventurous moviegoers. It's like,
for sure.
At some point when you've seen all the Transformers that you can take, and they're ill.
Which is one.
So, like, which is one.
Yeah. The first one.
Okay,
yeah.
It's us, we're saying. But the, the average filmmaker or moviegoer, I think, has seen all four. Soon to be five.
I think there's five, soon to be six, isn't there?
Yeah, there's
I tell
no
you
amount.
About the we had the class come through and we were asking them, and they said like the favorite.
And you felt your soul die.
Oh yeah, yeah. You feel a little bit. I mean, what they were 10 or 12.
That's
or
no excuse.
They were, but it was like that's okay,
that's really not an excuse.
I think they were eighth grade.
I can't.
How old are you in eighth grade?
Like 14.
Okay, they were 14.
So okay, they should have developed taste by then.
Okay, I can.
Or at least starting to develop taste.
They developed before the Transformers. All right,
I'll give them a pass. I didn't develop taste until later. I was a late bloomer as far as taste goes.
Yeah, me too.
Like, there was a college class where they're like, bring in one of your favorite films and explain, you know, why you like.
And what was
this.
Yours?
It's fucking Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
Shut
but,
up!
But that's the first one, so that's fine. That's the first one's good.
But, like, comparatively.
If it was like the third or fourth one, that's a problem.
But everybody else. Right.
But comparatively
bringing, like,
to everybody else, people brought in Pie. I'm just like. I like this movie. He's a crane in this shot, and he's pretty funny.
Mm. Yeah, but sometimes fuck those people.
But again,
because
but,
sometimes you can have big bombastic shit.
Yeah.
You sometimes look at, like, you The can. Dark Knight, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
It's a big budget.
Or Logan.
Love it. Yeah.
Logan.
Those
yeah.
Are
Logan.
Like, you know, there's more on their mind than just entertaining you. Which I guess is the thing. This movie.
You can do
is,
that. You can be big entertaining and then keep,
It is trying to entertain you. Mm-hmm. And it is trying to, like, you know, get some subversive message across.
It
there
is
as
indeed.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Colin's big reveal.
Yeah.
We now know more.
Yeah.
Why was that like
this
that?
Guy definitely does, like, fancy himself as like a David Lynch or Christopher Nolan, and he's
really
definitely
does.
Not on that level. Like,
well, where would we have been without? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I mean, the only reason that I think that you can get away with that type of stuff, the imagery, where it's like disconnected, you know, guy, you know, car pulls up, and you're like, what the fuck? And then the
Let's
main character
out
gets out of a trunk, you know, and grabs a glass of, like, hands a guy, you know, his sunglasses and gets a glass of water in return, just pours that out. You know, like, that kind of shit, like, comes from, I mean, I guess there was what, like, Louis Buñuel was doing stuff in maybe, like, the 60s. It's like experimental film, I suppose, right? It's like, how can we arrange the images and still kind of, you know, beyond, like, a narrative thing, create some kind of, like, mood or association in the mind of the person watching it that, like, you know, because you go to a movie assuming that, like, things occur in narrative linear order with a narrative where it's like I can follow a story from point A to point B. This is the story of the guy who woke up in the morning, you know, went to the refrigerator and the eggs fall on the floor or whatever. It's like you see all that in those steps.
Yeah.
And surrealism works in, like, this other way where it's, you know, using symbols to try and excite something in your imagination or unconscious.
Yeah. Or at least make something off about what you're watching. Because you can still have the, like, a character, the basic steps of it, a character gets out and is talking to you, but things are happening, like, just on the edges of what he's doing that is, like, extra to it. Like, again, he got out of a trunk, he's got the glass of water, just the odd moments that happen around what is kind of driving through the middle of the movie.
I have a question for you. I know you've seen this a couple of times, so I don't know.
Four times.
How long, so the concept of it, right, and the set, all this setup that we've talked about, how long did it maintain your interest? I mean, because, you know, you hear, like, something, somebody will say, like, it's a one joke movie or something where the joke is it's a killer tire and, like, it's trying to tell 80 minutes. Well, this one has a couple of different, you know, tacks, but it's like, how long did it maintain its, like, on that level of, you know, this is, how long can you keep telling jokes on that, you know,
path. Yeah. Maybe until it went into the pool.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the pool is where that's I'm just when it like, drops all right, off what for are me. We, what's, what are we doing? I think it's the pool where the tire's just hanging out doing nothing. Because at that point, the one thing that you're kind of... The most interesting thing is watching a fucking live tire doing its thing. And at a certain point, it just decides to hang out at the bottom of a pool. I mean...
Like The Graduate.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I was actually just thinking like, might be thinking too much about that. Maybe it's like Halloween where he... gets shot and is in the bottom of the pool, the empty pool in Halloween, yeah. And then he gets up and he's
well, that's what it is because
thinking more about this than the director did, I think, you know.
Right. But when he's in the pool, that's the switch to something.
The sheriff.
That's the switch to the sheriff, something else is happening.
Right.
Yeah. That's where we go to that. So it drops off on one, but it picks up on another and keeps going with that. So I think their intent was to pick you up on that and keep you more interested with, hey, now this is going on. Something is going on. That we'll never be clear about, technically.
It was basically just so you weren't thinking, well, what's the tire doing?
Right.
It's at the pool, at bottom of the pool.
Right. But now we have other characters who are doing something and getting shot. Like, the level that they're on is that they can pull out a gun and shoot the sheriff.
It's like Westworld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's
this is done in a demonstration.
Right. Like, none of this is really real.
Yeah.
Shoot me with a gun.
But
go ahead.
Why don't they know it's real?
Why don't they know it's real?
Because they're characters in a story.
Why isn't
it Westworld?
He knows, I don't know.
I know.
Right.
Because it's Westworld. It's like you've got one person that's the director of the whole thing, you know, and then everyone else is just the pawns in the story.
And they'll never explain, never specifics.
Well, he's the authority figure also, being the sheriff, right? It's like he's talking to his men.
Right. But specifics are never involved in this movie. Specifics are just like outlawed as far as, you know. The rules of a world. There are no rules at this point. Specifics are gone. He can get shot and it's just what's happening.
Because then he's like, go ahead and go over and slap that corpse. And they're like, no, she's dead. And he's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, but that interrupts what's happening, which
with
is weird.
Tire.
Like, because is he expecting, like, the tire is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is an alive tire. Like, so what
he has
is,
to eat and drink. He's like a, we see him, do all of that.
Why is that disturbing their world where they can get shot and not die? The fact that the tire is killing people.
Exactly.
Why is that?
I think I seriously think it's like a Westworld situation where they have this narrative that they're sticking to. And that as long as there's an audience, they have to stick to that narrative.
But do they not know that the tire can disrupt that narrative?
I think that,
and do what it wants?
I think once again, it's like Westworld where the tire has gone outside of his story. Right?
Okay.
So he's actually killing people now instead of playing the part of killing
people.
Now
that just makes me wonder what was the tire's story supposed
to be? Why was everybody there?
I don't know.
The movie they were supposed to be seeing. But the tire starts killing the audience members. not only is the master, poisoning his own audience so they can get out of there. The tire itself, when that fails, the tire's killing the audience members outside of the narrative of the movie.
I do love the rundown scene of the sheriff being like, this is our suspect, and like pointing to a tire.
Long to take that tire off the rim and everything.
And then the other
pointed to the car.
And the other officer's like, is it black? You know, it's like asking the most. But like that scene,
that's funny.
Yeah, to me that was real. That was
it could be white wall.
Yeah, to me that was like the most effective comedy in the movie was that scene because it almost seems like Reno 911 ish type humor.
This is one that actually to me seemed to actually go toward more of the Reno. The rest of it was like. Again, this is another like David Lynch thing. It's the deadpan delivery, like deadpan comedy, where it's funny, but we're not tipping our hands to you. We're not telling a joke.
Right.
It's just the joke is that we're going to say it with such absolute seriousness that you're not sure if you're supposed to laugh or not.
Yeah.
In this, it's like, well, but it's absurd, right? Yes. You're dealing
kind
of stuff. The deadpan.
I like that. That was like the one time that he decided to like seriously take up the like mantle of being a cop, and this is like the hill he's gonna die on. You know, like I thought that scene was great, and you know the fact that like he has all this information and like everyone on his team is like a fucking idiot and can't grasp what he's trying to tell you. Yeah,
that's as broad as they get.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
that's it. It goes through that broader.
Yeah,
and Michael Parks.
Yeah, his name's not Michael Parks.
Is it Michael Parks?
It's something Parks.
Oh, he's his son. Is it James?
It's something. Is it his son?
There's a lot of tertiary actors in this movie.
It's Michael Parks, though.
Michael Parks is the guy in
Red State.
And Quentin Tarantino.
But this is his kid.
Oh, this is his kid?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's like James Parks.
Something like that. I didn't know it was his kid, though. Good to know.
Yeah. If only Michael Parks had been in this movie, that would have been great. If he would have been the sheriff, holy shit, that would have been awesome.
But maybe that gives too much legitimacy to what's happening in the movie.
This movie, I think, would fall apart a lot more if it had recognizable people in it.
I think so.
It had Wings Hauser.
It had Charlie Coates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of CSI Cyber.
It had Ethan Cohen. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. Well,
I just want to put out there, I don't like CSI Cyber. I know I brought it up because I know I'm from that. I don't like that. He's also from Community.
He's from Community.
I know him from Community.
Listener, that's fine.
I worked at a TV. I work at a TV station that had played that show. But I used to have to watch the show. I was forced.
Do we have any further observations about Rubber before we go to Mailbag and our final wrap-ups? Does everybody here love Rubber? Hate it? Does the group like Splinter? We don't know.
Are we going to leave it very vague and for you to decide?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Are we just going to say no reason for all of our reviews?
No reason. No reason.
Yeah.
To like this movie.
Yeah.
Zinga.
Yeah.
Right. So, first of all, we're going to summon Igor, who's going to bring us our mail. I can't even say his name.
Igor.
Right? So the drink is getting to my head. Igor, where are you, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Igor.
Thanks, Igor.
Should we get a tire for him to play with?
He has a tire swing up back.
He does.
Is the tire swing same, Robert?
He can't reach it, though, because he's got that chain around the tree, so he's always
Oh, no, it's
like,
out back. He can't use it. He can just see it.
He can just see it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's not safe for him.
No. Yeah.
All right. So by the way, if you want to write in and talk to us, which we recommend you do, we'd love to hear from you. Please write into us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/SaturdayNightFreakShow.
Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
Or by email.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com.
And we'll read your comments on the air.
We did it!
So first of all, about Rubber, Chris Huddleston writes in.
Hi, Chris.
Hey.
And says, wow, this should be an interesting discussion. I saw it upon its initial release and thought it was pretty good. Definitely unique.
Yeah, man. I agree.
Nick Hammond writes in and said, seen this a while ago and thought it was awesome. About Leprechaun.
I like how you end those short ones on the high.
Well, yeah.
It's like, what's the come down?
Awesome.
And there's like, oh shit, there's an exclamation mark. Yeah.
Awesome.
So about Leprechaun, Dom Cree writes in and says, he would like to add that Colin seems to have way too much knowledge about pro wrestling because about Hornswoggle.
And, I don't think Colin has any knowledge.
I think he and Sean have more. I think the both of you. Because I was like, Hornswoggle. He's in this. I have no idea who that is. Yeah. But,
it's like,
no, you two definitely
we'll talk, Dom.
Got that corner.
I'll get that. We'll start a wrestling podcast.
Well, there you go.
He says that's not a bad thing at all, but he wants to know when we're getting a review of The Wrestler. He'd recommend other wrestling themed movies, but they're all crap except for maybe Pro Wrestlers versus Zombies. You have to be kidding me, Dom. Is that a real movie?
So we have just revealed Dom's love of professional wrestling.
I guess so.
Okay. Aronofsky movies are a lot to tackle.
The Wrestler's not really a freak
it's
show.
Not a freak show movie.
It's like a real
movie.
It's
Oscar bait.
I enjoyed it. I did too.
I think, just a side note here, if you watch The Wrestler and then watch Black Swan, after that, they are parallel movies.
They really are.
Black Swan is the female version of The Wrestler.
Yeah.
They are the same movie, but different gender perspectives.
Black Swan is so good. It's one of my favorite movies.
I think Aronofsky was like, I don't know if he intended to. I hope he intended to do it because it's genius. But yeah, I think together as like parallel movies, they are better than independently.
They mirror each other.
Yeah, they mirror each other perfectly. All right, watch them both. Yeah. The Wrestler and then watch Black Swan, and you will see lots of parallels.
My all-time favorite movies. Yeah. I love it so much.
Babette Georgie writes in and says, my favorite Leprechaun sequel was Back to the Hood, but I also like Leprechaun 2. I hated Space and have not seen Origins.
You got it right, Babette.
Someone else has given love to the Hood, finally.
Yes.
Really? Two? Two's
No, they're all the Hood bad. Ones are good.
Three's better.
Ryan Burrett writes in and says Leprechaun is a great movie.
Wrote this before you listened to our podcast, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah, you did.
And I want to give a special shout out to Patrick Hilton Poindexter II for liking a bunch of posts on our website.
So thank you. If you like a bunch of shit, we'll mention
it. It was amazing. I was getting alerts like,
thanks, man.
That's a guy who just discovered us. Is like, oh shit, I like this stuff.
So we appreciate
Hopefully he's a listener.
Yeah, we appreciate that, man.
I love it. All right. We had some good ones tonight. Dom.
We like his
Sea Huds. Yeah. Oh, I love
Sea Huds. You have a nickname
now.
Yeah,
and he said he loved this movie. So,
Sea Huds.
Yeah.
All right, Sea Huds.
All right, so we're going to go to our final wrap-ups, and then we're going to go around the table. Who are we starting with?
Colin.
That's me.
What did you think about Rubber?
I feel like I've been... Whatever I was going to say here,
beaten
I've been kind of saying through the entire show.
The entire?
Are you tired of talking about this movie?
No, not yet.
Are you going to retire?
I was going to say that!
Oh, we're high-fiving for no reason. We don't deserve it.
So many puns to be had with this movie.
Brother. Yeah.
Please give us your entire
wrap-up. I said, I have seen it twice. And so my first experience with the movie, I think, was that kind of, looking at it as like this is some kind of abstract, thing. And I think – so, okay, let's go on the – on the first watch, which is how I'm going to recommend this movie tonight, was I found it to be interesting, different, irreverent. I don't know if I'd say wholly original. Definitely like challenging as far as like, hey, we're going to do this thing. It's challenging to the viewer and I guess the people who funded it or whatever. It was fun in kind of a punk rock kind of way where we're, we've got somebody's money and we're just going to do whatever the fuck we want with it. It's got that kind of spirit to it. And so I enjoyed it. I hadn't watched it again since. So I know Michaela likes this enough that she's, owns it and has watched it several times. I downloaded a version of it to keep it because I'm like, I saw this thing and it's like this really weird alien, artifact that you got to get a copy of somehow.
But she hates Dune and has seen it like seven times. So that
exactly.
So yeah, but tonight at watching it, it was like, man, this movie hates me. And so I was really like getting that vibe. Like I was like, this movie has contempt for me and I have contempt for this movie. But I think that was only visible on the second viewing.
Mm-hmm.
My first experience going into tonight's, I'm like, I remember Rubber. I kind of like that movie.
Right.
And this time around, I was like, you motherfucker, So I was kind of like, personally assaulted by the movie and was reacting as, I was offended, I guess, by it. Or the sensibility behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, maybe if you've listened to this show now, we're like, yeah, you should see this movie. And you go into it seeing that, it'll color it. But, I would say it's of interest to adventurous moviegoers. If you are tired of what you see at the multiplex and you want something a little more unique, then
are you tired? Tired?
Let's see what I did.
Are you tired of seeing?
Yeah, they did it on their original poster. They did that. Yep.
Tired.
Yep.
So I'll give it. Let's go with 2.5 Goodyear tires out of 4. Sean.
Okay. I'll give a lot of credit to unique movies because, again, like we said, we get a lot of the same crap over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so going into this, like, it's definitely a unique movie and it's like we said, a surreal movie. And I appreciate it for that because I don't see a lot of surreal cinema. I haven't, like we said the other week, haven't seen a lot of David Lynch movies. So I don't see a lot of that stuff. And so, seeing this, like, I appreciate what they did. Maybe they have contempt for the audience, their audience, as we discussed here. But the movie does a lot that is very, very different, very interesting for me. So, I liked it. I liked seeing what they were going to do. Again, they'll tell you right off the bat, it doesn't make sense. But,
Maybe it's not supposed to. It's obviously not supposed to. And I'm okay with that because it's one unique kind of ball of a movie where it exists in itself and it doesn't kind of nothing from the outside gets into it. You know what I mean? It's like isolated onto itself. And I appreciate it for that. It just kind of exists in a little bubble. So I liked it. I recommend it. It did have a little contempt for its audience, but I think, you know, it's unique enough where I don't think you get many films like this nowadays. So it's definitely worth a watch. I give it, I'll say 3 exploding crows out of 5.
Three? Okay.
Out of 5.
Yeah, I agree that this movie was definitely creative, for sure. It was very unique. I felt like a lot of the scenes were way too long. I specifically thought it could have ended a lot earlier. I think it could have ended.
It didn't need that 5 minutes of end credits.
No, it didn't. It also didn't need like 12 minutes of the tricycle going through the desert. I think it could have ended the trike coming out of the house and going around the corner of the house. I think it could have ended there. It didn't need all that extra stuff with.
And if nothing else, right when it gets to the road and is kind of wheeling away.
Yeah,
and
right.
Cut to black.
And if they wanted it to like start recruiting, they were kind of in a dumpy area. They could have just like a couple tires could have popped up and went with it around the corner. Like it didn't need that extended.
Or if nothing else, you get that shot where it's going down. You're in front of it. It's going down the road by itself, and then just a bunch of tires rolling behind it.
Oh, that would have been great.
You got it. The image is the thing he's aiming for. The Hollywood sign.
The Hollywood sign.
Yeah, that's where he's going.
He's trying to really stick it to Hollywood.
Yeah,
fine. He could have done that, but he could have done it so much sooner.
Yeah.
I actually wanted the one of the tires for the wheelchair to pop off and follow it.
That would have been so great.
I was waiting for that. I was like, that would have been fantastic.
Huge missed opportunity.
Yeah, I thought so.
That's another $500,000 right there.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. That guy was dead. They could have popped a tire off. Just give an empty wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really was like, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about it. Like the movie, like the climax of the movie is the death of the Wings Hauser character.
Yeah, right.
And then it's like, well, where the fuck do you go from here? Like,
But it ends with that. He's the only reason everything's still going.
It does, but it doesn't. But there's like 12 minutes of a trike going up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. But that's the thing. He's the only reason it's still going to have all that superfluous keep going after he's dead.
Your brain starts to go like, is there still more to this?
Right.
Where can
it possibly go?
Right.
How much longer is this movie?
Right. And that's exactly what you start thinking at that point.
It should have ended right after the trike coming out and going around the corner. They could have done something there, brought it to Hollywood really fast if that's what they wanted to do. But it could have ended a lot sooner than it did. And I felt like there were several scenes that were a little extended like that that could have been shortened. Because it did feel a little long to me at some points. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed the dialogue, what there was of it, with the sheriff. I thought he was kind of funny. I actually really liked the accountant. I thought he was really good. And I loved his story he was telling at the very end before he died about how he killed his brother.
Oh,
I was like,
great.
What the fuck?
And does he not know the food's poisoned? Like, he dropped the turkey.
He knows it is.
I kind of loved the accountant character. I thought he was great. So there were elements of it that I really liked. I don't think I would watch it again. It was a little much. I like movies that you pull from it what you want as a viewer. But I felt like this one, it was a bit of a cop-out and not as much of a statement as he wanted. But like I said, for an interesting view, I'd say go ahead and give it a shot. I give it 2 poison turkeys out of 5. There you go.
All right. So a little bit of background on how I discovered this movie. So this movie came out when I was 20 years old and I was in art school in college. And the way that our art school worked is that you would just come in and you would work on your project, but everyone got a rotating day if they got to pick a movie that would be projected on the wall to, like, quote unquote, inspire us while we were working on our projects.
everyone hated everything I picked. And once I found out they hated it, I'm like, fuck you. I'll keep picking shitty stuff. Like, I showed them White Dog, which is, well, I'll probably make you guys watch at some point too, which is Christy McNichols in it. It's 80s. It's on Criterion. It's about a racist German Shepherd dog that attacks black people. It's insane. Yep.
This sounds great.
Yeah, it's great freak show material.
Black people,
yeah.
Buffalo where Charles Bronson.
Yeah.
It's the gigantic white buffalo that can break through walls.
Yeah. Huh. No, White Dog is about a racist dog. It's on Criterion. And it's got great box art on like this movie. But, you know, so I would always pick, you know, things that were really inspiring to me, and it was always really weird stuff. And this movie came out in theaters. I saw it as soon as it came out on DVD. I bought it and brought it in, and we watched it in art class, and everyone else was like, they were on board until about the pool scene. That's where everybody dips out of this movie, is the pool scene. And
this is where you find out where your life soulmates are.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. The first two times I saw this movie, like, I mean, I was 20 years old. So this is pretty fucking formative for me. Like, you know, when you're like in your late teens, early 20s, and you're discovering like quality movies for the first time. Like, I feel like everyone goes through, like, everyone watches, you know, like Fight Club and Pi and Requiem for a Dream. Mm-hmm. And there's everyone has those same five movies that like really start to develop your taste. Mm-hmm. This was like right after that point for me. So this like really helped push my taste into like not mainstream movies, into like, you know, indie and more foreign films. So it's really formative for me. However, every time I watch it, I like it less. I think watch it once and don't ever watch it again.
I would agree.
I think it loses something every time you watch it, which is weird to say because I own it. You know, like, why do I own it?
True.
You know,
but yeah, I mean, you got to get it somehow to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Somehow it's like, I got to.
Right.
There's nothing else like this.
Right.
This
right.
is the example you can hold up.
Right.
But how else do you come to the conclusion that it is one and done? It
should be,
unless you are watching more than
you
once.
You have it to show to other people. Like, so she'll always have it to
hand.
Oh.
You want something for tonight? Like, you should try rubber. Then you'll find out who that person.
Half my movie collection is, is people being like, oh, I've always wanted to see that. And then I have to watch it with them. So that's why I've seen movies so many times, is because like I own things people have always wanted to see and
just
have never seen.
Here's rubber. Yeah. I'm going to leave the room, but go ahead.
I'll let you borrow this, you know. exactly. Yeah. However, it still is an original story, and in a culture where we have very little to no original storytelling, and it's a low budget movie. Whereas right now, every movie is insanely high budget. I have to give it credit for that. And the practical effects are great. And I think they do a really good job of building suspense and emoting with something as simple as a tire. I think it's worth a watch. But like I said, watch it once and then don't ever revisit it. Because the initial exploration of the movie is what makes it interesting. Mm-hmm. After that, it really loses its...
it's an experience kind
exactly.
of movie.
It really is. Yeah. It really is like a weird art house film in that way that like it's a weird art experience. And then after that,
it's
you know,
watch it, you just try and figure it out.
Exactly.
What I'm doing. That's not its purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a one and done. Yeah. So one and done it, and then don't ever go back to it.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Rubber. On the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, it's going to be my pick.
Colin!
What are we watching next week?
I think we're going to watch the original 1995 classic film, Ooh. Ghost in the Shell.
All right.
That's right.
Colin's got topical.
Topical.
I'm just curious, like, how many of you have seen it?
Yep, I've seen it.
Yeah, the anime.
Okay, anime.
It's
fantastic.
Ruin the new movie for you, just so you know.
Yeah.
But okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
All right, so that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.